Get ready to rock radio, music you want to hear.
And deeply ensconced in his log cabin in some far-flung location, we're saying hello today to Tony Clarkin from Magnum. Hello to you, Tony.
Hello, David. I don't know about exotic, but yes, my cabin, yeah.
And if I can start off by asking you about the album-making process, Tony. And I seem to recall in one of our previous conversations, you mentioned that sometimes you'll have maybe up to 40 song ideas. But how does this transfer or translate to an album situation? And do you carry over any ideas from previous albums?
When I hit a blank or something, and probably just to amuse myself, I go back and listen to things. And occasionally I may find a line or something, or some very small part that I think, oh, that's not too bad. But as far as the song goes, when I'm actually putting the album together, and so I end up with like 11 songs, and sometimes I started with 60 songs, sometimes 40. I know this sounds really crazy, but they're all very rough. Normally when I've dropped them, the reason is mainly because I don't think they're good enough to put on an album. So there may be a small fraction of a song that I think, oh, that's okay. It's like an exercise you go through. I mean, I like to go forward. Once I've done the album, that's all done for me. I don't really like looking back. I'm looking to move forward, basically.
Yes, sort of fresh material, really, I suppose.
Yeah.
Now, when you go then into the studio with your songs and the rest of the band, I mean, I know you probably build up the layers, the drums and the bass and everything. It's always a fascinating process. But when you're with the guys in the studio, are there any particular tracks, maybe on this new album, that have changed quite a bit from your original vision for the track, Tony? So, in other words, you know, one or two of the guys have maybe added something, or do they pretty much remain as is?
They pretty much stay as a song, anyway. They stay pretty much how I demoed them in my cabin. Mark will play better piano than I play, and Harry will come up with better fills or any sort of drum pattern that he thinks fit. I mean, invariably, it would probably be better or the same. Sometimes it'll go to me. I'll say, have you got anything better than this, H? And like, he'll go, oh, no, I think that works. I sort of take his word for it, and we plough ahead and put it down. I would say the main thing that would happen would be pretty quite a long way along with the song. I may pull out the bass guitar, or pull out the drums, or pull out the guitars and just piano and vocals. But originally, it would have been with the whole band. A lot of times, again, it's a mistake. You know, maybe I'm listening to a playback and the drums aren't there for some reason, and I go, that sounds good. You know, let's do that. The basic song pretty well stays the same, but there are, I would say, changes in arrangements. Also the speeds, that's the one thing I've never actually said. Speed's a really important thing. It can make a track drag like mad, or it's too fast, it loses all the power and the heaviness. In fact, we changed the speed that many times, it drives me crazy, because that means I have to put the guitars down again and again and again. Bob will come in and go like, I think this is too slow. I'm like, yeah, let's speed it. Then, okay. And then we do that. And then a week or 2 weeks later, we listen back to that song. We go, oh, that's still too slow. We speed it up again. And I have to redo all the guitars. This is prior to Harry putting drums on. This is like, I suppose, it's an early stage, really.
Mm.
But these are all you know, all the things you have to do, I guess.
I don't know, Tony, whether you saw the documentary recently on television, which was called Sound City.
That was next door to Goodnight LA. I mean, I went in Sound City while I was there. When we were making Goodnight LA album, it was named after the studio. The guy that was the engineer there, Shay Baby, said to me, would you like to go into Sound City? Some amazing records have been made. I said, yeah, I'd love to go in. I don't think there's anyone in there at the time I went in. It reminded me of Morgan Studios, really worn, you know, like sort of carpets worn, everything sort of looked as though it had been there for like about 50 years, it looks like. But a really good vibe in there. And that was, I think that was one of the things people said about it. Relaxed atmosphere. I mean, we were working at Keith Olsen's studio, immaculate, nothing worn out at all. I mean, he was like really pristine and a very good studio as well. Two different sorts of studios right next to each other. I don't think it's got that studio anymore. I don't know though, he may have.
Yeah. Now, Goodnight LA 1990. We've spoken about this before because uniquely on this album you collaborated with other writers, including Russ Ballard and Jim Vallance. He'd worked previously with Brian Adams. Now, I mean, you're bound to get asked questions, Tony, about your illustrious songwriting. I mean, Magnum has been all-consuming for you, but when you worked in the States on the Goodnight LA album and with these other writers, did it ever open up possibilities that you could actually pursue a separate career as a songwriter for other people, a sort of Brummy Desmond Child?
Yeah, lots of people, well, various people have said to me, you know, you should, you know, do this or do that. And I don't really have the inclination. I think at one point I started to do something, but again, I was going to myself, why am I doing this? This is crazy. Why am I doing this? And writing songs for some fictitious person, expecting them to do a song. I mean, various people have recorded songs I've written anyway. To me, again, because I had this sort of negative feeling about it. I didn't feel that it was the right thing to do. I know what I'm supposed to do musically, and doing the Magnum stuff, being with STV, all the artistic freedom I could ever want. So it's crazy just to go like, oh, I'm going to write a song for, I don't know, whoever it might be. I mean, all that about it, you know, it's crazy to me. So I'm very happy with what I'm doing. I mean I look back over the years, and there's times when record companies or managements and all that sort of stuff are saying, you've got to do this, you've got to do that, you've got to write this, you've got to write that. And it drove me nuts, which is one of the reasons I went like, oh, I've had it, you know, I'm not doing this anymore. So I'm happy at the moment doing what I do.
There probably would have been more pressure, I would imagine, you know, if that's the way you'd have gone in the early 1990s.
Yeah. Pressure, I don't mind pressure at all. In fact, I can get things done pretty quickly. I'm under pressure, but it's not something I want to do. I don't want some guys turning around to me and saying, you've got to write a Bon Jovi song or a this song or a that song, which they did say all that when we were at Polydor and things, you know. Or Whitesnake, you've got to write this. You know, I mean, hang on a minute. You know, we're not Whitesnake, we're not Bon Jovi, we're not Def Leppard. So it just meant they were so narrow-minded from a musical point of view. I can understand why they did it, because they want to make dough, the record company. But we were trying to put across thoughtful music, really, that people could listen more than once, so the album meant more than just play and then throw it in the bin.
Well, we should say that the new album is out in March, and the European tour starts in earnest in April. I know from previous conversations, Tony, you don't seem to be a great one for anniversaries. Let other people tell you about anniversaries, as we've done in the past. I reckon that it's mainly record labels, isn't it, and management who normally point out, and also internet radio stations occasionally, that anniversaries are on the way. I mean, we should mention, really, that next year will be the 40th anniversary of the release of your first single. You know, that's important. And this year marks the anniversary of a great album. It was like a last gasp for the band in some ways in the 1990s. And you know, I'm going to mention Rock Art.
Yeah.
Remains an excellent album, I think. And I know it's Mark Stanway's favourite. Can we look forward to any tracks on the forthcoming tour?
From Rock Art?
Yeah.
No, I don't.
So you don't think you'll slip in a couple of tracks to recognise that 20th anniversary?
I'm learning the show at the moment, right? There isn't one, no.
Oh.
The truth is, there isn't enough room.
Have you any other plans, Tony, this year that you can share with us in terms of... I know you'll be promoting the album, but any other events lined up? We should mention the meet and greet.
Oh, yeah, yeah. At the Robin.
At the Robin.
I think it's the day after the album comes out. It's just really nice to, you know, to actually meet people that come to see us, you know. We don't play. We just, chat and sign autographs and all that sort of stuff, you know. You recognise the faces, you know, in the crowd.
It is a nice thing. It's almost, I have to say, like a traditional thing, isn't it, that you might have done back in the heyday of the 1980s, really, this... sort of meet and greet idea, and it's very nice to see the band keeping that up, and I think it's great for the fans, you know.
Yeah,
so we look forward to that great European tour. I've just confirmed it does start early April, takes you all round Europe and back to the UK, and we'll be looking forward to that. Very grateful thanks to Tony Clarkin, and all the very best with the new album and with any plans you have in the near future and 2014 in general, Tony. Thanks for talking to us.
Thanks, David. Thank you.